Hello and welcome to the Prisoner Officer Podcast. This podcast is a place to talk about the forgotten cops in this country's jails, prisons, and correctional centers. A place for me to try to make sense of a career working inside the fence with some of the greatest people that nobody sees or recognizes for the important job they do. In this episode, I have invited an expert in communication who has researched stress, employee assistance programs, and PTSD in the correctional setting. She has been impacted by correctional stress, and I know it has a special place in her studies. She's one of the smartest and nicest people I know, and I'm one of her biggest fans, so I'm thrilled to have her on the podcast. She is also one of the most beautiful young women I know and is an amazing violinist. If I sound a little partial, it might be because she is my daughter, Jacqueline Brandhorst. Welcome to the Prisoner Officer Podcast, Jacqueline.
Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
And I'm extremely happy to have you here. So let's get started. I have been working in prison probably for as long as you can remember. So there wasn't a time that you didn't know me as a correctional officer. What do you remember about the stress I brought into our house from working in a prison?
I don't think I really understood the stress of the job itself or really what it was that you were doing each time, you know, you left each morning. To me, those things were kind of hidden from me as a child. So I don't really even recall you talking about being stressed at work all that much. What I really remember is sort of the behaviors that manifested, I think, as part of working in that. So when I reflect back, I think about, you know, some things that made you seem really harsh or maybe unnecessarily strict and definitely paranoid about things that were going on outside of the world. So for me, I always felt like you needed to control everything and you were very, very strict in making sure things that were controlled. So those were the things that I remember. I don't think otherwise that it really occurred to me that you worked in such a stressful setting.
Right. So why did you think I was strict and controlling and maybe a little paranoid, which I still might be?
You definitely are, but that's okay. I think at the time I didn't understand why you behaved that way. And, you know, reflecting back so much of this, I see now that maybe it's because you really saw the worst of humanity each day, and that maintaining sort of procedures and control and being aware of your environment, that is in many ways so incredibly important. It's the being able to control that worst possible outcome is part of your job. And so I think I understand that now, but being strict really came through, I think, in the structure of our household growing up as children. It was always sort of what dad says goes. You're going to fall in line. You're going to make sure it happens. There wasn't a lot of room for discussion. So that's not to say that you and mom didn't sit down and have conversations with us about, you know, making good choices and what those good choices look like. But it was always sort of dad gets the final word. You're going to be expected to do what dad says in that moment. And now I kind of know and understand that maybe that came from working in such a structured environment with those clear boundaries and procedures that really can mean the difference between life or death.
Oh, absolutely. And I think I still have that mentality. I know that I often require people to follow my instructions now without discussion. I think I'm good with having a discussion afterwards. I do believe I listen to people, but in that moment, I feel that hesitation or ignoring instructions can have dire consequences. I remember having a few conversations with you about that. Do what I say now, we can talk later. Do you remember the snake on the walking trail?
Only vaguely.
Yeah. You were an energetic child, without a doubt. Always going, always moving, and it was often hard to keep up with you. And I remember a day that you were probably 5 or 6, and we were at some park hiking on the paved paths. I remember it was spring, and it was one of those sunny days you wait all winter for. I mean, we were excited to get out, and we were hiking somewhere. I think Mom was carrying John, and we were a little ways ahead of you. And you always had this squeaky little voice when you were little and talked constantly. So as long as that was going on, I knew you were good. But, you know, when I didn't hear it for a second, that's usually when I turned around to see what was going on. Well, you had stopped that day, and you were probably 30 or 40 feet behind us. But when I stopped and turned to look at you, you started running my way. But the problem was, somewhere between when Mom and I had walked by and you, there was a copperhead laying across the paved road. And I think he was sunning himself. So you kept running towards me, and I yelled for you to stop, which you did. And then you started running again. And I again yelled to stop, and you did. And then you came running and ignored me right down the path. And you jumped right over that copperhead like it was nothing. Scared me to death. But I also remember trying to get you to understand how important it was that day for you to follow my commands. I believe we even had a little practice session where I said, stand up, sit down, stand up, sit down. Just trying to get that, control, like you talk about, in there. I think that what no one knows about that moment, in my mind, I could just as easily see you running for a ball or something. From working in prison, my mind goes a whole different direction. I see you, chasing a ball out towards the road, and here pulls up some child predator, and I would yell for you to stop, and you'd keep running. You wouldn't listen to me, and then they would grab you, and I couldn't stop it. Those were the kind of fears that I had. And I think that comes from a lot of what we see and what we know that the rest of the world doesn't know. One of the worst things about being a correctional officer is that we get these horrific case files of these things that people don't really know the details of. Most people just get to hear the 6 o'clock news version. We get to see these child predators who keep cut out magazines of little kids, and we see this every day when we go into work, and it's sick, and it works on our brain, and I think it's worse for those of us that have children to know that those people are out there, that those individuals are there. They're just the darkness that's in society. What most people enjoy on TV is a crime show. It's real to us. And then we go home and we see our kids and we're scared to death inside. So I think, I'm not saying that I wasn't controlling. I'm not saying that I wasn't paranoid, because I absolutely have been. But that's the reasoning behind that. Mm-hmm. So did you know I had those feelings, or why I was scared for you in that way? And
no, definitely not. And I think it's interesting that you say that, because, as children, I think as young people and even as angsty teenagers, we see, oh, Mom and Dad are being strict. Dad's being strict. He's being unreasonable. He doesn't understand. And you don't realize that that comes from maybe a place of fear or a place of being scared, because I never knew you to be scared. That's another thing. That's something I think that's important for working in prison as well. You can't really be fearful, right? That's right. Not something to go around doing.
Right.
So it's interesting to even hear you express now that was a fear that you had. And so I think it's, I of course understand these things now. At the time I was just a kid and I didn't even know better. I was wondering why mm-hmm. is Dad being unreasonable? Why is he this way?
Right.
And of course I know now, and I see that, and I'm able to hear and talk with you about those experiences, and it helps me understand things that happened. It brings so much clarity to the structure of our house and the way that you communicate and the way in which you kind of navigate the world now.
Right. We are shut off emotionally. We can't show emotion at work. We can't show fear at work, because the moment we do, the inmates that we work with will jump on that and they'll use it against us. And that of course carries home. I know you guys probably noticed that. What did you see out of me emotionally at when I was at home at the house?
Yeah, I remember feeling like you were emotionally numb a lot, and mm-hmm. I didn't really see you get excited about things. And I remember kind of wondering why that was. You've always been very stoic. I think that's the best word for it. You're very just taking in your surroundings, being very aware, calm, quiet. When you did express emotion, it it was anger, probably, I would say. Even now as an adult, I can only recall you crying once, and that was at your grandma's funeral. So I remember definitely feeling frustrated about that as a child. I didn't really understand, why don't you get more excited about things? Why don't you kind of express the range of emotion? I think you keep that part of yourself hidden. And I remember one of the really distinct times I really saw a strong emotional reaction from you. And I'm sure you remember this. I certainly do. I was in middle school, and for some reason, you and mom were late to pick me up from school. I don't remember what happened or why. But I remember that I just decided that it would be okay for me to walk home. Again, this is my my middle school brain before it's fully developed. So I just decided that this is what I would do. And so I remember you picking me up on the side of the road when you found me. And it was one of the first times I think I've ever seen you really scared. And I remember you pulled over on the side of the road and you just hugged me. And you didn't even yell at me. You know, there wasn't even anger there. It was just, you were telling me how badly I had scared you, that you couldn't have imagined losing me, that you thought maybe somebody, just the scenario you just laid out, that exact thing, maybe somebody had picked me up. You didn't know where I was, what I was doing. Maybe I was lost. Maybe I'd been kidnapped. And it sounds kind of now as a, as an adult, overdramatic and silly to say, thinking back, because of course you loved me, right? But I remember having that moment where I was like, oh, Dad really, he really cares about me. Dad really loves me. If something happens to me, Dad's going to be sad about it. It sounds silly to say now, because you told me you loved me. You know, I, that was always part of our conversations in our household as a child. But it was one of the only times where you truly, I saw an expression of emotion out of you that really took me back.
Right. I remember that very well. I remember you did scare me to death. What people listening don't know is that you had to cross a four lane to get home from there. So, yeah, I was driving all over the place, didn't know where you were. It was, it wasn't a fun day. So do you think growing up as a young girl that it was harder on you without having a father who was emotional?
Yeah, I think I felt like you didn't understand me, and which most teenagers feel that way, I feel like, in some respects. So take or leave what you will. I think that that was aggravated maybe by your profession. I feel like we were much closer now than we were when I was growing up, just because I didn't, again, didn't understand the stress of the job, didn't understand anything like that. All I saw was the consequences for me of, oh, Dad doesn't want me to do this. Dad doesn't want me to do that. Dad is strict. I didn't see the other side of it. And now that I see the other side of it, and I know we're going to talk about my research later on, but now that I know some of what I know about the profession, it makes sense to me, and I understand it and see it, and it's really a miracle you were as lenient as you were with us, given all of the things that you've seen and experienced.
Right. The way we shut down, that has to be hard on families. And it's not something that you can just, you have to turn that on and off every day. You know, it's not like you turn it on for a month and turn it off for a month. Every single day, you're turning that on and off. And that, it not only becomes tough, I can tell you that there have been times when I've walked out of work, when I've worked a 16-hour shift in a SEG unit or something, and people have heard me talk about this before, but you walk outside and you've been doing those overtimes for a week, and you're not sure which person you are. Am I that person? Because I'm fixing to drive home. So, yeah, there's that. What else do you remember about when you were growing up? Surely I wasn't completely strict.
Yeah, so I've given you a hard time thus far in the podcast, so we can redirect it a little bit. I do remember a couple of fun times I kind of look back fondly on, and that's that sense of you always tried to prepare us, I think, for just being aware of our surroundings. So one of my favorite stories to tell friends that always gets a rise out of people is how you were constantly telling us to pay attention and respond to our surroundings. So we would sit and we'd have dinner conversations and you'd say, okay, what are you going to do right now if someone walks through that door and they have a weapon? How are you going to respond? Where are you going to go? How are you going to do it? And so I remember constantly, and I do that as an adult now constantly. Okay, where are my exits?
Good.
What if someone walks here right now? What if that? And that's from you. So the paranoia paid off, I think, there in terms of awareness. So, and I still remember we'd have conversations where you'd say, listen to your gut. Your body's going to tell you when you need to pay attention to something. And you would sort of go through the process of categorizing your surroundings by color, the green, if you feel like everything's perfect. And
right.
The yellow when you're heightened and red when you perceive that danger, and you would walk us through.
Absolutely.
How it would feel.
You should never be in green, should you?
No, no. And I'm constantly at yellow now, yellow or red. So
I wonder if that's something that a lot of children who grew up in corrections or even law enforcement, because I'll bet you there's a lot of police officers who do that same type of thing with their kids growing up. So it'll be interesting if we get to hear from some people on that.
Right, right. I'd be curious to hear it as well, because I think that's part, that preparedness is part of it. And I certainly got that from you. And I don't think I'd necessarily navigate the world the same way if I didn't have that sort of framework. So I remember you would tell us about preparedness. And one particularly fun afternoon, you had my brother, you know, John, my brother and I respond to a knife fight, what we would do if we were in a knife fight. And mm-hmm. I remember you grabbed wooden spoons from the kitchen drawer and you were demonstrating how you might, protect your body if someone ever tried to stab you. And we were in the floor just kicking our feet up.
Yep. Crab crawling.
Yes.
Yep.
And I love telling that story, I think, for the shock factor, because most of my friends look at me and they're like, what sort of household did you grow up in? But I really think back fondly on those memories. And of course, you know, you're always showing my friends your prison paraphernalia. You'd get out your box of shanks and tattoo guns and you'd tell all your stories. And
that seems to always be the life of a party when people came over. They wanted to see that box, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So, you know, I think it wasn't until much older that I truly realized the impact that the job had on you. And I think that was one of my primary motivations for going to graduate school, was to study corrections.
Mm-hmm.
And so you put the idea in my head in college. I remember around my senior year, we started having conversations about really the alarming health statistics that are associated with correctional work in terms of higher divorce rates, higher rates of PTSD, lower life expectancy, you name it. And it seems like this population really experiences it mm-hmm. in terms of just the toll that it takes on your mental and physical health. And so I was immediately fascinated by that. And I wanted to know more about the profession. I think both, you know, we study sometimes what we don't understand, and that's what I was doing a little bit. I wanted to understand you a little bit more, and I wanted to understand you so bad I got a PhD trying to understand you. So I remember thinking and really working through and writing paper after paper over this correctional work and what that entails and what it's like. And then I completed, you know, a dissertation on it. And it was through that dissertation research that I really felt like that's when I was able to connect with you really emotionally on a level that we hadn't necessarily been able to before.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Another thing that happened there together was when you started becoming a communications major, I was moving into supervisor jobs. So I started studying communication and leadership, and come to find out we were reading the same books and, you know, listening to the same TED Talks and that kind of stuff. So that gave us something to talk about that we hadn't before that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because, you know, we've really been able to connect over this communication and then corrections, and those things really go hand in hand, I think. I think once I started doing my research and the more officers I talked to, the more I got this clearer sense of really what it meant to be a correctional officer. And you start to see that job isn't just a job. It's a lifestyle. It really impacts everything about the way that you see the world and you interact with people in it. And it gave me so much clarity around what it is that you do day after day and why it is that you prioritize the things that you did. And I remember, you know, you gave me your copy of the book Monotonous Chaos.
Right.
And I remember I read that in one sitting and I was just crying because I was reading your thoughts and your sort of memoirs on what this process has been like for you over the course of your lifetime and what it's done to you sort of as right. an individual in terms of the job itself. And so I remember kind of that plus the research and your book, it just gave me that whole sort of sense of who it was that you were. And it made me really, really proud mm-hmm. and also really kind of profoundly sad to see that that has had an impact on your life in that way, because I do feel like in order to do the job, you have to hide away a little bit of your humanity. And I think you talked about that, you know, talked about it today where you feel like you have to switch on and off. And I think that to feel protected in that profession, you really have to switch something off. And that off sometimes is hiding that part of yourself that makes you human. And it definitely impacts everyone around you, but perhaps you the most as well. So, you know, it's interesting to, it's a profession that has consequences for everyone involved.
Absolutely. I don't think, I agree with everything you just said there. And I don't think, from my point of view, I don't, as much as we internalize that stuff and block it off, I don't think we realize how much it affects the rest of the family. I don't think we realize how it affects our wives and our kids and even friends and community. I mean, they look at us kind of strange the way we do hold back those emotions and don't share them like normal people. I don't know if that's the correct word, but it is. We don't realize how many people we affect with what we bring home and or even what we don't give. So,
mm-hmm.
wow. So that was great. What are you working on next? You're talking about your research. What's the next thing?
So right now I'm working on publishing several articles for my dissertation, and all of them are focused on mental health in some way, mental health in the corrections profession. And specifically, you know, we've talked about how I study communication. I'm very interested in how correctional officers are communicating about mental health and how they're seeking help from resources, be that an employee assistance program or some other sort of peer support program, how they're seeking help for those resources, or if they are, because as we've talked about a little bit here, there's such huge consequences here for physical and mental health when you're talking about this profession. So I'm continuing to work on that research and even thinking a little bit about resilience. What is it about correctional officers that helps you be resilient in the face of this job? And so that's the kind of research I'm conducting. I'm still very much interested in talking with people. So this research is not done. I want to hear from people. I want to talk to them. And so, you know, it's been wonderful to be here today and kind of share this with you and also open it up for your listeners that if they want to talk with me, if they want to share some of their own experiences,
absolutely,
I'm very much interested in hearing from them. So
where can they contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you can email me at Brandhorst, B-R-A-N-D-H-O-R-S-T at ucmo.edu. And I know that this is also, this podcast is going to be posted on the website and on some social media platforms like Facebook. So you'll see me tagged on that. And if you want to contact me there, I'll have my contact information posted there as well. I'm happy to reach out to you, or you may reach out to me via messenger, via email, anything, if you're interested in kind of sharing your experiences.
What kind of experiences are you looking for?
Sure. So as we talk, it's going to be about a lot about your own perceptions of your work, of stress, of how you've handled stress at work, how you kind of talk about, or if you talk about, your mental health experience at work, resilience, and organizational resources. I'm curious to hear. The interviews I've done have very much been along kind of trying to figure out what's the culture of corrections and sort of what implications does that have for how you all are talking to each other about your health and wellness and
absolutely
taking care of your health and wellness. And, you know, my research is definitely demonstrating that there's a lot of room to grow there, to take care of you all as a profession, to make sure you're getting the support you need from one another and from others. So,
okay. Well, I would love to have you back on the podcast, and I'd like to hear more about this research. Are you willing to come back sometime?
Yes, of course, please. I would love to talk about it.
Let me ask you one last question. What leadership book are you reading right now, or what's your favorite book?
Right. So I am reading a book right now that is from actually a speaker I got to see at a conference a few months ago. Her name is Dr. Dolly Chu, and she's a social psychologist and professor at the New York University Stern School of Business. And the book is called The Person You Mean to Be. And so it talks about Dolly's research is really about our unconscious biases and how that impacts how we interact with one another, even in our daily lives and also in the workplace, and what it is that we can do. She offers a lot of practical steps to really use a growth mindset when it comes to being aware of just differences in our lives and how we go about navigating those to be essentially good people.
Good people.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. We need more good people.
Yes. How are we good people?
Thank you. I'm going to post that book on the Correctional Leadership Library on Prison Officer podcast page. So if anybody wants to look at that book or any of the other leadership books that I have recommended, or my mentors, or what I'm wanting to do is bring on some of what the guests, what they're reading. But you can find that at www.theprisonofficer.com. And I just want to thank you for your insight. I know there are a lot of COs out there and their family members that are going to be able to relate to you growing up in corrections. I don't think you have a totally unique experience. I think there's a lot of kids out there that have grown up with some of the same things you're talking about. So I thank you, and I hope to bring you back here shortly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jacqueline. If you haven't already, check out the Prison Officer Podcast on Facebook and click that little follow button or leave us a message. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Google, or Spotify, click the subscribe button. Till next time, I'm Mike Cantrell. Watch your back, and please take care of each other out there behind those walls.